So, as we head into the ninth hour of the 18th day of 2018, as far as Lincoln, England is concerned, clearly with bated breath, we turn to Gabriella in Gibraltar for those immortal words. What's going to be happening as far as the weather is concerned today, Gabriella?
Okay, so the weather for Lincoln today is highs of 5 degrees centigrade, lows of 1 degree centigrade. It will be a cold day with sunny spells and scattered showers.
Live from Gibraltar, with or without her faithful friend Frodo, it's time for Gabriella Peralta on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
Quite right, too. So, the big question is, Gabriella, looking at your social media presence at the moment, have you gone chocolate crazy? Have you just decided to say, what the hey? You know, I know Lent starts with Ash Wednesday on the 14th of February, so let's just pack in the chocolate to the max now. What are you doing in terms of Baked by Rose's post? Is that chocolate, chocolate, and more chocolate? What's going on, Gabriella?
Well, it's competitions for free chocolate, so why wouldn't I enter?
So that, the Hotel Chocolat Gibraltar's post from that. Go on, let's face it, you're going to be having a Gibraltar chocolate festival before we know where we are.
Probably,
yeah.
I'd hope so.
Yeah, exactly.
We do have a food festival.
Well, you know, why
I don't know if I've mentioned that one.
We have indeed. I mean, clearly, but you could go that further stage further and indeed open up a whole chocolate festival as well. Outrageous. Still, never mind. News from the Fuzz Aldrin camp, because Phil Leonis had hoped to join us today, but he's just been actually... In fact, he's just added a new photograph to his Instagram account. Fuzz has had more challenges, Gabriella. Oh, no. But I think... she is okay, because apparently yesterday the reason we couldn't feature Phil Leonis for his usual Wednesday evening slot was that he spent 12 hours in the emergency room waiting for Fuzz Aldrin, who only ripped off her esophageal feeding tube and had to undergo sedation and have the procedure performed again in addition to all her regularly scheduled tests. I mean, the one thing you can say about Frodo, I know he's not a cat, but the one thing you can say about Frodo is, you know, he doesn't rip out his esophageal feeding tube and so on and actually work through that basis, does he? You kind of know, is he asleep? Is he not asleep? You know, and what state of consciousness is he in today?
Well, right now he's gone for a walk with
again?
My dad.
Right, right. So this is consistent, actually, because that's what he was doing last week, of course. He was out there. Is this a New Year's resolution? Has he actually got that motivation to continue to walk because that's what he does?
Well, he walks like 3 times a day at least. Mm-hmm. Not massive walks, mm-hmm. but he does walk 3 times a day. So he's just going for his morning walk.
I see. It's technically the morning constitutional. From that point of view.
He needs to do his business, he needs to have fresh air.
Precisely. And are there any particular lampposts or trees that he has a particular fondness for that he likes to actually just mark his territory on, or just check what the neighbourhood watch has been saying as far as canines are concerned?
Every single lamppost, every single tree,
really?
Everything. Yeah. Frodo will mark on everything there is outdoors.
So if it's standing in one place, presumably if you actually had somebody who was actually just standing still for one moment, you could run a risk, basically, of Frodo actually leaving his mark on you.
Who knows at this point? But everything.
Probably.
Everything you can think of.
Probably not the most savoury of topics to actually talk about at 6 minutes past eight on a morning, but you know, at least it proves that, you know, we're not afraid to shy away from where canines in Gibraltar will be leaving their particular mark and so on. And last week, of course, the revelation was made, Gabriella, that you seriously think you're actually getting a feline friend for Frodo. Do you see the way I used alliteration there? Feline friend for Frodo. Mm-hmm. The four Fs. Marvellous. You can actually write an article for that on the Gibraltarian Chronicle. It would make headlines,
feline
actually.
Feline friend for Frodo.
I don't
think we'll get the feline friend until probably September.
But you're building. You're building up to that whole thing. You know, it's the kind. And before we know where we are, I mean, here we are, 18th of January. Whoosh! Before we know where we have it, it'll be September time, and we'll be looking forward to New Year's 2019. Amazing. Anyway, moving to other sort of topics and so on, what does the day have in store for your good self, and how are the Gibraltarian Chronicle, or how is the Gibraltar Chronicle, continuing its march to becoming one of the most successful papers of the globe?
Well, today I don't have too much on my calendar. I just have to go to court and then catch up on things that I have to write.
Oh.
So today is more of a catch-up. I need to write a few articles. We've done, we've worked with the Young Enterprise, so I need to write a feature on them that they've launched, the students have launched their companies, so need to do that. And there's a few other things I need to do.
Well, you know, that's part and parcel of the whole system. People can, of course, access the Gibraltar Chronicle online, so don't feel as though, what are they talking about the Gibraltar Chronicle for? We can't actually get hold of a copy. You could also subscribe to the whole thing. Anyway, that's by the by.
Yeah, and you can get a year's worth of back copies if you subscribe.
Wow, that's just, you know, sometimes the goodness that's actually available, it sort of beats everything hands down. From the interesting news front, I see that within Britain, the BBC have actually published the test that President of the United States, Donald Trump, actually undertook. I took it myself this morning, actually, managed to score I scored 5 out of 5, so that's good. You know, so technically, I'm you know, Donald Trump, Alex Lefchuk, it's an interesting side, although I'm not sure whether the Trumpster will actually be coming along to a midweek drive in the near future. Not really, are we kind of negotiating that? Who knows? It might just be a step too far for both of us. Anyway, apart from that, let us move on, because Richard Fitzwilliams is awaiting. He's going to be talking about the Post and Hostiles. Before we get there, though, Gabriella, are you particularly excited about the upcoming Academy Awards? Is it something that sort of appeals to you? Will you be watching the awards in Hollywood and so on?
I usually don't watch the awards. What I do is the next day I go on YouTube and I usually watch the intro with the presenters, because usually they're comedians, so it's a bit funny. But I don't think I think I've watched one film that's up for Academy Award. Shape of Water, I think it was called.
Yes, the Guillermo del Toro number.
I watched that film. It was quite good.
Unusually science fiction-y for yourself, Gabriella. I didn't think, you know, I didn't think you were sort of quite into the science fiction.
It was I don't want to spoil it for people.
It's
semi-romance.
And you got water.
Kind of, yeah.
And you got a shape of water. You know, it's fantastic. Mm-hmm. And does water have a shape? Of course, when it's ice. I won't go any further on that particular thing, because otherwise it's far too random. It's coming up to 8:10 as far as Siren Radio is concerned, and indeed the time in the Great British Isles. Richard Fitzwilliams is awaiting. We have those last two questions to put to Gabriella. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today, Gabriella Peralta in Gibraltar?
Yes, I have. Thank you.
And can we look forward to connecting with you again in about 7 days from now?
Yes, we will.
clearly the best way. One step at a time, two steps at a time, you can create all manner of problematic issues from that point of view, as many a politician would actually say. No names, but it can happen. Finally, after last week's pre-record and the Golden Globe scenarios and the fact that Dunkirk didn't do anything, sorry, I did say it was his weakest movie, though. Richard Fitzwilliams, good morning. Welcome back to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition live.
I know, but you are indeed provocative early on. I have to say that I found quite a lot of people who agree with you. BAFTA is Dunkirk's last real hope of having a chance at the Oscars. We've got, of course, the Oscar nominations next Tuesday. I expect it to do well, but what will happen on the night? I mean, that's the point, and we won't know that till March, in fact, but if it doesn't do well at BAFTA, then I think it's going to be between The Shape of Water and Three Billboards. And possibly, don't rule out a movie we'll be discussing in a few minutes, The Post.
Oh, yes. Well, interesting enough, Gabriella Peralta in Gibraltar said that she'd recently seen The Shape of Water and gave it a full thumbs up as far as the text was concerned with Guillermo del Toro. Do you find it more of a romance than a science fiction thing? But that's okay.
Well, fantasy.
That's what Guillermo del Toro does.
And did with Pan's Labyrinth 6, but I would point out that whether you call it a fantasy, a science fiction romance, or whatever, no science fiction movie has ever won at the Oscars, so the odds, I mean, the 2001
I know. They just don't like it, exactly. They just don't like it. I mean, much as I'd love to see Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets actually win, it's not going to happen. I know, just appreciate that.
Yes, well,
he won't even get nominated. However, just a reminder, and I sent this email to Phil a matter of, an hour ago, actually, because he was still actually up in Los Angeles looking after Fuzz Aldrin. Come on, Fuzz, we're rooting for you. In terms of the Fitzwilliams Leonis Challenge, I shall very shortly be inviting both of you fine fellows to effectively submit to me directly, your own predictions for the major categories of the Academy Awards. So you can start beginning to plan that. You don't have to speak about it at this particular stage, Richard.
Well, no, we haven't even had the Oscar nomination.
I know, but I'm just prepping you, you see. I'm just prepping
you. Yes, I'm looking forward to it. I look forward to it, just certainly. As I say, those who look forward to the to coronation would have got such a treat, wouldn't they?
Well, indeed. 1953, of course, was when the event took place. Or was it 52?
It was 52 that the Queen ascended the throne.
But the coronation, of course.
The coronation was actually 16 months later, and without any question, Churchill used it as of an excuse, as the series The Crown showed, to prolong his premiership. No question, though, that it was the
most... Let's be honest, Richard. Looking back at that particular period in time, take a little time machine, you had Clement Attlee, who was the Prime Minister, the new Labour landslide government, who effectively had gone out in 1951 with the Festival of Britain, after effectively sort of having various financial challenges, shall we say. The Conservatives were back in, and that was the sort of state of play. Of course, we were still under rationing. By we, of course, I'm referring to the British Isles. Having won the war, rationing was still in place pretty much until 1953.
Yes, you're right. I mean, it's an era that most people can't remember. I mean, it is extraordinary. 65 years ago, and to hear the Queen discuss it, as it were, in a conversation, this was something I saw previewed at St. James's Palace, with the Royal Collection being examined, its various treasures will be looked at by Andrew Graham Dixon in a series shortly for the BBC. It was fascinating to see the insights that we had there and to hear Alistair Bruce talk about what it was like to have a conversation with the Queen. The Queen's never done an interview. She has occasionally over the years, once in the 1970s in the Commonwealth, once in 1992 in a documentary, she's shall we say, added commentary. In this case, it worked superbly because we had insights where she was, so to speak, prompted. I was absolutely riveted by it, and also there were these fascinating insights into the jewels themselves, not just the coronation. I mean, the fact that the Cullinan Diamond, when it was discovered in South Africa, they wanted to send it to Britain to give to Edward VII as a present. They had enormous precautions against thieves when it supposedly was on the high seas. They'd actually posted it, registered for a post. Imagine it, the diamond actually in registered post. Quite amazing. And precautions to take it to the Netherlands, a Royal Navy ship was supposedly involved. In actual fact, the head of the famous firm so to speak, split it into several diamonds, something the Queen said that she would love to have seen, actually had it in his pocket.
Amazing.
There are extraordinary stories, including Colonel Blood and his attempt to steal the crown jewels from the Tower in 1671, and he was apprehended, and for some extraordinary reason, the King not only pardoned him, but gave him lands in Ireland.
He was probably just a lovable rogue, that's all. It was
undoubtedly he was.
The Ronnie Biggs of his time, perhaps. You know, it was maybe he was off to Brazil, or perhaps not, because travel was not as great at that stage.
It was not. But one thing, on the subject of travel, very interesting that the Golden Coach was so uncomfortable. It was horrible to travel in. Going round half London, as the Queen said, absolutely dreadful.
Well, you know, if you ascend to the throne, you can't expect to have comfort for every single part of your experience. You know, that's the bottom.
Including reading the speech from the throne when you open Parliament, and if your neck was to bend down, it would, instead of bringing the speech up to it, it would snap off.
These are the challenges which we are all faced with in our own way. But following on from the 1953 coronation, a matter of 18 years later, we find the Washington Post facing a historic dilemma. Should you publish or should you not publish the Pentagon Papers? It's another Steven Spielberg Academy Award outside possibility.
It is indeed, and this is actually very interesting. It was snubbed by BAFTA, I thought, cruelly and brutally. And I was absolutely riveted by this film. Just to give a little background to listeners, the saga of the Pentagon Papers in 1971, it proved that the policies of successive American governments in Southeast Asia were duplicitous. It was commissioned by Defense Secretary Robert McNamara, played here by Bruce Greenwood. It showed that the Johnson administration knew that they could not win the war, and yet its policy, continued by Nixon, sent troops to fight and often to die. The conflict was pointless. It cost over a million lives, and Daniel Ellsberg, we see in the first scene of the film, he's a military analyst. He's observing the actual fighting in Vietnam. We see a bit of that. Years later, he's realized what has happened. He's realized the various schemes and duplicities of various administrations. He copies incriminating documents, and he sells them to the New York Times. But the New York Times initially uses them, and then is banned for doing so after using the first extracts. Regarding the Post, we've got this wonderful pairing, Meryl Streep and Tom Hanks. I don't think they've ever acted together before, but certainly it works a treat here, because rather like the dream team they were in real life, they're both fascinating characters. Catherine Graham, played by Meryl Streep, quite extraordinary, a lone woman in a man's world. You see men everywhere in every boardroom. You never see a woman. The fact that she inherited the Post and wants to keep it going, her husband had committed suicide and he'd inherited it from his father. The fact also that Bradley is the editor's editor. He loves a good story. He loves chasing it. He loves fighting for it. He's desperately, desperately upset the Times had the scoop how to get Ellsberg to leak material to them. But the problem is that they are complicit because they've used the same sources, the New York Times. So when they decide at a time of financial difficulty for the Post to go ahead, and then it's fought to the Supreme Court, it's a time that the paper basically could have gone under and they could have been in jail. So you've got that as the background to it, but you've got superb casting. You've got extremely fine photography. Janusz Kaminski, who photographed Saving Private Ryan, involved here. You've got music that sets the mood. You've got the thriller-like atmosphere. You've also got Meryl Streep, absolutely marvelous as Catherine Graham. And what Streep does so well is show how shy and basically self-effacing she appears to be, but she's deeply principled, she's devoted to the post, and she's got nerves of steel when she needs it. And Hanks as Bradley, yes, it's a super performance. It perhaps very much in the All the President's Men and Spotlight type of editor who fight in every way possible, but it's the teamwork that's excellent. And also what's so good is his script, his writers, he's served well, because you also have a fascinating insight here into the very, very complex relationship. So easy to talk about this, but very difficult to be in the actual situation where the famous are courted by the press, and then you become friendly, and it's a rather Faustian pact, because as you're close as Graham is to McNamara, what would you be revealing and in what way, and would you not reveal certain material because you know somebody? And that aspect of it is looked at, and very, very impressive, this movie. The First Amendment guarantees the freedom of the press. Well, it ends with Watergate, and we know how dreadful that was, but it's got relevance for us today, and that is the essential aspect of this, because the era of Donald Trump, what does one say?
As a filmmaker, Mr. Spielberg invariably comes down on the side of optimism. Here, that hopefulness feels right. It also feels like a rallying cry, the words of the New York Times. Is it a moment where the zeitgeist is absolutely spot on, and that actually, if it hadn't been for the Donald getting to the presidency, maybe the movie wouldn't necessarily have actually had the same resonance as it now has?
Well, I think that a film like this, a story like this, always ought to be told, because there are always threats to the press, and that it's also always important to highlight freedoms that are worth fighting for. But there's no doubt it's special relevance at the moment, because you've got the era of fake news and bizarre behavior by someone who I find it hard to...
Oh, bless him. As I said, I've taken the Trump test. I've passed it. I got 5 out of 5. You should do it yourself, Richard. It's interesting.
You're a genius.
Well, you are. It's all connecting, that whole line. And, you know, we wouldn't actually give up on a particular existence for all the money in the world, even if we did have to reshoot because Mr. Spacey had been a naughty boy and we wanted Christopher Plummer, who was probably a much better candidate for the role in the first place because he's the right age.
Well, you're right there, actually. It's very interesting that Ridley Scott was actually going to choose Plummer originally, so although it was an extraordinary shoot, and Mark Wahlberg got, as you know, $1.5 million for it, and possibly for contractual reasons, but it was or did look extraordinary that Michelle Williams only got about $60 a day for the extraordinary reshoot, which meant Spacey was eliminated, and Christopher Plummer plays the richest man in the world, John Paul Getty. And here we also go back to the 1970s, and what happens is that his grandson is kidnapped, but when it comes to a ransom, the kidnappers demand $17 million there in Rome. Getty, based in either hotel, we meet him originally, where, quite right, he doesn't do his own, he does his own laundry, you know. I mean, imagine the bills that he'd be faced with if he didn't. I mean, it's quite extraordinary. You see him. You also see extraordinary aspects of this character's eccentricity. If you visit him, imagine making your own telephone call at his expense. Certainly not. He's got a phone installed in the place where you wait so you can pay. You've certainly got an idiosyncratic and weird tycoon, no doubt about it. You've also got somebody who's utterly ruthless and who fears that if he pays one ransom, he could be faced with paying others. And we see flashbacks detailing the disastrous marriage between his son, John Paul Getty Jr., and Gail Harris, so well played by Michelle Williams. She rejected alimony in exchange for the custody of the children, as the father was a junkie and completely and totally impossible. But the bizarre reunion, when son, wife, and father actually meet for the first time, that's extraordinary enough. And then the refusal to pay the ransom. But Getty does ask Fletcher Chase, played by Mark Wahlberg, formerly with the CNA and his fixer, to secure the release. The only problem is he's got no money in which to do it. And so we follow what happens. It's a fascinating movie. It's told very much in the form of sort of docudrama. Again, it's a thriller. It's well shot. The music is appropriate. It also, I very impressed, very, very impressed by Michelle Williams.
Well, I'm pleased you said the music, because, of course, the music composed by the same genius who worked with Guy Ritchie's The Man from U.N.C.L.E., that's Daniel Pemberton, another movie which we love, cherish, and just basically treat as a very special moment in our lives, really.
We do, most certainly we do. Sometimes we waste time and sometimes...
exactly.
You're in wonderful form today.
You've got Alicia Vikander, you have the joys of Superman as well, Henry Cavill. I mean, what's not to appreciate about that?
Well, there's a lot not to appreciate when you don't pay and when you lose an ear. That, of course, was the infamous aspect of this kidnapping that the world learnt about. How it happens and how it finishes, I have to say climactically, the one flaw in this movie is that it most certainly didn't end as quite as we see it, because there's a very dramatic confrontation which almost certainly is set up for the movies, but it's a fast-moving, pacey thriller with excellent performances and dominated by Christopher Plummer's
Exactly. So you see, it all works out okay in the end, despite what...
Yes, although I would make one point, apart from the climax, which, as I say, is obviously over-dramatized for film purposes. Plummer's emotionally atrophied symbol of the worst excesses of capitalism, John Paul Getty. Just one little point. We see brief moments as to how he built up his fortune in oil. But 25 years... younger, he looks exactly the same. You must.
And isn't that just part of the rich tapestry of life, Richard? It's thumbs up, certainly from your good soul, for All the Money in the World and
Oh,
the
yes,
Post.
Yes, no doubt about it. There it's a really good movie.
We have had a message from Eva McDonald to placate the phenomenal range of Yvettes, who are actually the Eva McDonald fans, who regularly sort of say, where is she? What she's doing? She's actually listening to the programme, which is fine. That's okay. And don't worry, she will be making a cameo performance in about 20 minutes or so, when she actually speaks with Dick and Dom in the bungalow.
The cameo performances, I see in a weird... I've never seen them, but I see in the International Movie Database online, I apparently have made two cameo performances as Royal Commentator,
exactly.
And I didn't know.
Exactly. You see, this is it. You know, that's what it's all about. That keeps us real in every sense of the word. We did promise our ace public relations soul, not your good self, Richard, obviously you are an ace public relations soul, but another ace public relations soul from The Joys of Nottingham, that would be Doug Brown. We'll be playing him a little tune in a matter of moments, so we've got that now. It is 31 minutes past 8 o'clock. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today, Richard Fitzwilliams?
Well, yes, because we've had wonderful material to discuss.
I was very tempted to actually tag you into the London Boat Show photograph we took of Princess Anne last week, but I thought, no, perhaps not. Just have a look at the Facebook thing. She was on good form, though, which is always nice. So was Sir Geoff Hurst.
Hard-working.
Yeah, exactly. It's just
always is.
Wondrous. Onwards, ever onwards. We will speak again next week.
No, we most certainly shall.
I'm sure if you wait long enough, good things will actually happen, especially if you support Newcastle United. It's all right, Ian, don't worry.
A long way that line.
You didn't want Amanda Staveley to coordinate a deal to actually... I mean, you're much happier with Mike Ashley staying in charge.
Of course we all are.
Exactly.
Right.
It's big
exciting times.
Sighs of relief.
Are we going to get relegated for the third time in 11 years or not?
Hey, result. At least, you know, it's another kind of step forward to joys and so on as Ashley ends Newcastle takeover talks. I guess the talks, which were believed to be worth around about £250 million English pounds, have now actually been ended by War Mike, as I know you don't refer to the man in Newcastle, but still, never mind.
No, I don't think you could. We wouldn't be able to use it on the air,
Fair enough. But wasn't it exciting to see how the joy of actually facing Newcastle United in the FA Cup fourth round so motivated the men from Norwich and indeed Chelsea last night in the battle royale in which on penalties Chelsea managed to just scrape through to have that pleasure of taking on board the Toon Army for the fourth round.
Yes, I think that was... I'm sorry, I can't do this matter.
You see, I'm looking here to
build... I remember, I think it was 1971 when I was working in Manchester. And I was playing golf on the day that Malcolm McDonald made his home debut against Liverpool for Newcastle.
Mm-hmm.
And he scored a hat-trick. And the news came filtering through and to the golf course. And when his eyes sort of made some large, loud Indian whoop noises on the fairway, and was admonished by a friend of mine who, with the words simply, "How on earth can you be so enthusiastic about something over which you have no control?"
Mm.
And there's an escape of logic in that, except it's like a drug.
Well, you say that, Ian, but surely the 12th man, as many football fans are often referred to, they actually, on one level, with the wonderful group mind and the omni mind, we do have control. You know, we do have that. If you believe, you can actually carry that support through, that energy is there. So, you know, maybe
but
it's just because...
as much in the castle.
Again, you say that, but would you rather be in the situation of Hartlepool, who this weekend we have a save pools scenario where Middlesbrough fans are effectively going to support Hartlepool playing Wrexham to hopefully keep the club afloat and alive in...
I would hope that a lot of the larger local clubs would lend them players for nothing, you know, keep them going like
course,
that.
Of course, Middlesbrough repaying the debt when Hartlepool provided Middlesbrough with the training grounds to actually work in when Middlesbrough went, effectively, into liquidation in 1986.
Yes, I mean, Hartlepool was a very, very important part of the local culture.
And for the first time, they were relegated from the league, and look what's happened to them now. So you see, as a Newcastle United fan, you've got it easy. Seriously, you should be thanking the Lord each day for the Ashley Cockney Mafia, who've effectively sort of kept the club together with...
You're enjoying this, aren't you?
I thought it was a glorious draw you managed to get with the might of Swansea City on Saturday. You play another City, of course, this weekend. After the debacle of the Liverpool game, where really, Pep, I know you've got confidence in your players, but going 4-1 down before you start scoring again, it's not good. It's not good, really. It's a different line to that. Still, never mind.
It was a strange game, though, wasn't it?
Well, yeah.
I was quite happy at that.
I thought you might have been.
I rather like Liverpool, actually. I rather like the way they attack.
You're right. Under Jurgen Klopp, of course. Klip Klopp.
Yes, and I like him as well. I think it's something... He's a fundamentally decent, cheerful man, actually. Although he just gets strangled with the rage of passions of football.
Unlike Jose Mourinho, of course, who probably also is a fundamentally decent man, really. But given the choice, here we are. This is a test for you as we approach 20 minutes to 9 o'clock or 8:40 a.m. Lincoln time. Presumably it's the same in Newcastle. Given the choice, would you go for Rafa Benitez or Pep Guardiola? Given the ideal choice, who would you have?
As a manager of Newcastle United. I'd still stay with Benitez because he likes the area, and I don't know what Guardiola wouldn't stand the antics of actually for about 10 seconds.
I did not mention Guardiola. I was talking Jurgen Klopp.
Oh, Klopp.
Yes.
I still would say the same because Benitez has accepted the fans at Newcastle and is sort of he's part of the culture now. I don't know how long he'll stay, but he seems to be a very genuine man with a genuine love for the area. And I think Liverpool and Newcastle cities are similar, you know, in many ways. They're both ports and they've both got sort of
You can trace the 1974 FA Cup final when Liverpool thrashed Newcastle 3-0 to the time where basically Newcastle's demise started, followed in 1976 by losing 2-1 in the League Cup final to Man City. But anyway, it's all good. You know, let's face it, in the immortal words of the Keegan, he would love it if he actually sort of beat things. This is the thing that worries me slightly about City's position. I hope we do not do Newcastle.
You have got the parallel, haven't you? 12 points clear and you lose the title.
So just, you know.
I don't think that's going to happen in this case. First of all, the manager is tactically much more shrewd than Keegan was. Keegan played a beautiful style of football, but it was he didn't play the odds at times. And if you're 12 points clear and you're still trying to win 4-3 every game, you're asking for trouble.
Almost suicidal. And let's face it, things could be worse. You could be following Sunderland. Sorry, Chris Coleman, but never mind. Lincoln City, of course, doing well. We have to sort of give a
name check. Good.
Doing very well indeed. If we actually look at the table for Lincoln City, we see that they're currently in sixth position in the second division. So they're in the playoff places. Currently.
So if they get promotion, they get to what league?
They get to League One.
League One, which is the top non-league team.
No. Already gone through they've come out of the National League. They're in League Two. They go to League One. Then they're actually just two divisions away from the Premiership. Actually, one division away from the Premiership because of the Championship. So there we are. So Lincoln City in the Championship. Who knows? It may well happen in a couple of years. Currently Luton Town, top of League Division 2. Anyway, enough of such stuff. How's the writing going, Ian? And clearly we'll plug once more the joys of Bare Knuckle. But are you kind of doing a director's...
I'm getting revised. What happened was I was, as you probably know, I've been ill for about 6 or 7 months. Mm-hmm. And off in one way, and I lost basically one of the virus I had, maybe lose energy. And I brought out the book in November, and I should have had it proofread by experts. I didn't, and there's a lot of literals in it at the moment. So what I'm doing is I'm getting people to go through it. Mm-hmm. And,
well, I've spotted a few misapostrophes that are in there, but never mind. You know, I just thought it's okay.
It's horrible when you do it.
Frustrating. Just sometimes just let it go. It's all right. Go for the sense of the whole system.
Well, yes, you can, but I mean, also you expect
it hasn't reached the stage yet where I've needed a tally chart to actually score the number ones there. It hasn't been a neurotest at all.
No, I mean, it's just a I worked as a professional journalist for 40 years.
Standards, exactly.
You know, and you have certain standards, and this is not acceptable. So I'm going through it again. I'm getting friends. I can't... You have probably never experienced it, but when you once written a book, you've worked it maybe a year, 2 years sometimes less, and you're sick to death of it. Mm. So when you try and proofread it,
you just can't stand it.
Never the most exciting thing to do.
No.
Some people enjoy it.
Well, exactly.
I just can't do it. My mind just blurs over.
We will find out what Ian Lennox thinks about resolutions in a few moments, such as actually proofreading books, after a little dash of Fleetwood Mac and Big Love on Siren Radio, where the time is 16 minutes to 9 a.m. on the 18th of January 2018. Looking out for love in the night so still. Oh, how build you a kingdom in that house on the hill? Looking out for love, big, big love. You said that you love me and that you always will. on the department of Alex Levchuk's recommendations to movie makers, I would solidly recommend that when the movie rights to Ian Lennox's Bare Knuckle are actually made available and around, go for that. But when you actually have a sequence of the first fights for our hero in the hoppings and so on, with lots of battles, etc., you should have Fleetwood Mac's Big Love as a musical bed. I just put it to you. You can see a little montage of shots being developed as you have win after win, and it becomes less boring then because you've got Fleetwood Mac in the background with this. You've got the punchiness of the music, and you've got the narrative being driven along as well. So there we are. Have that gratis, Ian.
Well, if you can organise the film, I'll certainly agree to the music.
Okay, there we are. Well, obviously, we'd have to contact Fleetwood Mac and perform this, but that's fine. I'm sure they'd be honoured to actually have the.
When was that recorded, you know?
We're talking 1980s, Ian.
Oh, really? Because the famous one's Rumours, of course, which is 75, wasn't
it? You know, Gypsy. You could even go back to Man of the World and
Albatross. Oh, yeah, that wonderful song.
Well,
yeah.
There we are, exactly.
Very short, wasn't it? It was a very short song from memory.
But never mind. It's still perfectly formed. Alan Shearer, another Geordie of... some repute, I believe, although his record actually went for calendar year to Harry Kane, claimed that VAR is a shambles, video assistant referee.
It's too early to say, you know, isn't it? I mean, I remember when we started to introduce substitutes, and it was all hell broke.
Exactly.
People were saying the game will change forever, and the people will be using for tactical reasons, not for injuries, and we just accept it now. Mm. People are frightened of change, I think. They're getting comfort by repetition.
Exactly. So, did you make any New Year resolutions?
No, I never bother. I was breaking off the first day I do anyway.
Well, that's even worse than average, because according to most surveys, effectively research commissioned by Amazon, and as a company they should know pretty much what they're doing, although people said the same about Carillion. Not that I'm connecting the two, but there we are. Apparently yesterday, the 17th of January, was the day when most people would throw in the towel on resolutions and they give up, effectively.
2.5 weeks.
Exactly. However, there are ways in which you can actually maintain that positivity, and we'll be speaking to Professor Richard Wiseman, Professor of Psychology, of course, who'll be talking about strategies to work through that process. Apparently this year, most people would say that what they really want for their ultimate New Year resolution is to get better sleep. Over a third of the nation actually would like a better night's sleep to actually have that. A quarter.
I've been really lucky in that respect. I've never really had anything like insomnia.
That's because you don't have a guilty conscience, even though you support Newcastle United.
They're going to fix on this all year, aren't
they? It's a thought. Almost a third said that getting more sleep was their main goals. Enhanced mental health was regarded as basically being at the top of the agenda for most people. And a quarter of folks surveyed wanted to improve their personal admin.
What does that mean?
Probably...
Tidy the house.
I would have thought so. Personal admin. One in five also pledged to see more of the world in 2018. And I'm not sure where you'd sit on this particular one, Ian, but apparently the latest craze is Veganuary, which is organising a plant-based diet. Sales of vegan deodorant have actually gone up 900% on Amazon. Organic coconut spread has actually gone up 153%, and tofu has gone up 140%.
Do they ever last, these things? Somebody else. People started eating cabbages.
Clearly, after the 18th of January, they might have actually gone completely.
Yes.
Now, I know that it's our mutual colleague and friend, Arthur McKenzie, who it's high time he joined us back on the programme. I shall have to drop him an email sort that thing through. He's our keen rugby player. Danny Kerr, Harlequins rugby player, and indeed England rugby player, is joining us also in the second part of the programme. He'll be talking about the Aviva Positive community group that's actually there. Danny first played rugby union with Leeds, actually, and then has obviously gone on to London's Harlequins and more. And keeping the sporting theme going, Ben Stokes, raring to go for England, according to Trevor Bayliss. So, good news there, then, I suppose.
Yeah, that was a strange about turn, wasn't it?
Well, I mean, it's like gentlemen and players for the 21st century.
Well, yeah,
and as a Durham lad, you're obviously going to, or a Durham fan, you appreciate Ben Stokes' connection with Durham. You think, oh, don't talk to me about the ECC, etc. It can go off to all sorts of ways. Ian, have you had an interesting and relatively positive and uplifting telephonic link with us on...
Yes, it cheered me about it, especially mentioned in the Castle Night every 20 seconds.
Yes. No, actually, it was every 45 seconds, if you're actually being precise. Listen back to the podcast. You can work the way through to that basis. There's more to life than that. And besides, there's a slight nervous edge here insofar as, you know, clearly next week we will know the result of the return match. I mean, if you look at aggregate, we managed to get a 1-0 win at Newcastle, where indeed I think Shearer also said that some of the Newcastle players were actually just, you know, hopeless in many ways. What is it that...
As I said after Saturday's debacle, some of them can't even pass the book.
Exactly. So that's
a bit cruel, I suppose, but,
yeah, but
I was rather angry at the time.
I'm not surprised, you know. And,
anyway, I'm trying to give it up. I think I'm probably going to support some tiddlywink.
Hartlepool, they could do with your support. We said that. So there we are. Give thanks to Hartlepool and work on that premise. So I take it you'll be back with us in 7 days from now?
Yes. If Newcastle beat Manchester City and lightning as it sounds, I shall be camping on your door.
Yeah. You say that, and I just think it's a harshness. I mean, I haven't even asked how Ollie and Obo are, really. I mean, are they keeping well?
Yes, they're black and white.
I thought cats. So. Yeah. Well, you could always go sky blue, although they'd probably be a bit poorly if they actually did turn sky blue, so that's a different line entirely. And I might end up supporting Coventry. Ian, it's been a pleasure and delight as ever. We've got the Marmosets with Major System Error taking us up to the news. Oh, actually, probably a little touch of Strangers from Sigrid. Then, before you know it, we'll be back with Dick and Dom, Into Bungalow with Eva MacDonald, Danny Kerr and Alistair McQueen, Richard Wiseman, and much more on Siren Radio. We will see you very soon, Ian Lennox.
Okay.